The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Hot Stocks. I'm joined live by Paul Hill. And it's been another day in the markets with Big Data, Paul. Let's start off. First of all, before I start off, if you're joining us right now and you haven't subscribed to the channel, please hit that subscribe button, like it. And don't forget, comments there are live. We will react to the comments. If you want us to look at any stocks, any charts, any questions for Paul, let us know. But let's start, I suppose, Paul. You know, we're just fresh off a couple of hours ago. CPI data came out. What are your thoughts so far?
Well, I haven't really sort of like gone through the detail of the CPI in the UK. I mean, in the US, it was sort of hotter than expected. I'm guessing the UK was relatively sort of still firm. I mean, the wage growth is still sort of 7 or 8% in the UK, but I don't believe it's going to change the sort of the decision by the Bank of England. I mean, I think probably services is still quite firm when it comes to sort of the CPI. So on that basis, then I hope that Andrew Bailey's just about done in the UK, because there's definitely more cracks here than there is on the other side of the economy, because we've had over the last month, we've had hot jobs in the States, hot PPI, hot CPI, and we had a blockbuster retail sales number as well yesterday. And that actually did push up the market's expectation of where the Federal Reserve will be. And they believe now there's 40% chance that they're going to nudge up interest rates by January. But I think the UK is probably about done, because we seem to be having a weaker economy, and the lagging effects of rate hikes seems to be coming into the economy faster than it is over on the other side of the Atlantic, i.e. such that more people's mortgages are rolling over, credit card interest balances are going up, and auto loans are coming up as well. What's your view?
Yeah, that's the 30-year bond there. I mean, it's trying to break that sort of, you know, the previous high back in the Liz Truss days. But do you know what? I was scrolling through the figures there, but I did notice, I mean, China's been flat recently, but their GDP year on year, quarter three, is above expectations. It's down from 6.3.
Do you believe it, though?
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't believe anything the Chinese say at all. And you could start, a good starting point of that is COVID, wasn't it? When then Wuhan, you know, the city it came about in, they've had very few deaths, apparently. They didn't have a vaccine. It's bigger than London, and yet, you know, apparently they had very few deaths. But here's the CPI. Basically, it was expected to come in at 6.7 last month, and that was a bigger drop last month than expected. But it came in at 6.7, so just a smidge above expectations. But, of course, they're saying that is down to oil, and also hotel rents have gone up. So, but largely down to oil, people traveling in cars, petrol and that. So stop using cars, everyone, okay? Stop using it, petrol, diesel. Go on EV. And do you know what? I was looking at the stats, and people worry about you were just talking now. I said, do you have an EV? And you're worried about it. Do you know, 75% of all journeys are less than 5 miles in the UK people take. So we also, obviously, you often take that long journey every now and again. I suppose that's the thing you throw into the mix, isn't it? But what do you think, 75% less than 5 miles? It's worth buying a little EV just for running around, and then having, you know, another car, either all diesel or petrol car, just for the long journeys, isn't it, I suppose?
No, but, if I was just going on a short trip or just doing trips all the time, then I would just wait until we have robo taxis, because that'll only be sort of 3 or 4 years. If you believe what Elon Musk is saying, they'll be on our road. And
you can't wait in the house until I'm going to wait in the house until.
Well, there you go. You know, just don't buy it. Just keep your car running for 3 or 4 years, and you'll have robo taxis around for everything short. You'll be able to nip to the supermarket, go down the gym, whatever it is you need to do. And it'll be fine. But at the moment, certainly when it comes to sort of like long distances, if I go to the Lake District or drive over to Wales, you don't get many sort of charging points that work, never mind which are actually there. So I still need my petrol vehicle.
Yeah, you need to get ZapMap, of course, which is owned by Good Energy. They got 50,000 charges on that now. So 50,000 in the UK are on that map. So it's quite a lot. 50,000 in the UK, when you think about it. That's the story of AIM, by the way. Look at that. It's hitting new lows again. This week, I've gone through most of the indices, and they have been trying to rally. But AIM, look at that. That's pretty much the low, and it's down now, 7.78%, 771 days from the high. So it's struggling a bit. But,
I mean, my portfolio has been feeling that pain as well, like everybody else's. I was just doing the numbers, and in the first half, I think I was up around about sort of 15, 16%, and now I'm about 5% up. So the summer's taken a big chunk out of my my returns for this year. But I'm up and I can't complain.
It's good.
And, you know, most of it's gone south. It's just that I've had a couple of, you know, Eagles has done well. So that's sort of done quite a lot of the heavy lifting for me. And a few of the others have been relatively static. So, you know, it's just one of those things. You just got to live through these pains. As I say, I think the key catalyst is what the UK interest rates is going to do. I don't believe today's slightly firmer CPI data is going to change the sort of like the dial with the Bank of England. And on that basis, if they're just about done, we've got real rates, which are positive, because if you believe that, you know, inflation, and I do, in the UK is falling, then, you know, you'll start seeing that over, you know, sort of like certainly in next year, and therefore they're just going to hold. But once they start seeing the leading indicators in the UK cracking, then I actually think Andrew Bailey's going to cut interest rates, and that should be the catalyst that lifts, hopefully, the sort of like the small caps and a bit more sort of like risk tolerance by investors. The difficulty is at the moment you can just get sort of like, you know, 4-5% on your cash, so people just dump it into money market funds, which is all fine and dandy, but you know, we've had that fund manager redemptions for such a long time, and at the moment there's no real incentive to to change that.
Yeah, someone did ask me that. I mean, once it's almost the markets, we know momentum is so important, because like I say, once the markets go down, you get retail people sort of pulling money from funds, then funds have to sort of do redemptions, so it adds to the sell-off. And so, but once you start to see that bounce and you get stopped the outflow and the inflow starts, you'll see that big, I think, very aggressive bounce happening. But you're saying the leading indicators are quite good, because you've got now, I mean, like I said, wage growth is above inflation. So people are going for, you know, sort of raises in pay raises. They won't be able to argue significantly that they should have a 10% pay rise when inflation's at 6.7, you know? So, and not only that, I mean, labor markets are loosening. You see, the people are pulling recruitment. And that's the thing that obviously flows into, because of course, when the labor market is tight, then people have to, you know, incentivize by offering increased pay. But that's not going to happen now, because that is loosening the pay market. So I think we are sort of in that area where we're, you know, it's changing. The picture's changing, I think, for the positive. And it does take a while. But I think, I do genuinely think we're set up nicely for an end of the year rally. Because we've had sold off so many, you know, so much. But I think then we'll probably have a consolidation maybe the first quarter. But I think the bull market starts properly, you know, in 2024, Q2, Q3 maybe.
I'm a bit worried actually about the US banks, because obviously we've had the start of the Q3 earnings season, and all of them have beaten expectations, but the share prices have gone nowhere. So the likes of, you know, sort of like JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo, Citibank, all of these guys, and they've put out some pretty good numbers, but the share prices have been flat, if not gone down. And these are, for them, they're at really low valuations, which says to me there is still a bit more sort of hidden ordnance on their balance sheets, which is not a surprise. If people are starting to sort of worry about the Fed increasing interest rates, then all of these unrealized losses on their held to maturity securities are getting deeper into the red. And I think that's what investors need to sort of like, if they go into any type of banks, whether it's UK or European or US banks, is that because we've had that sort of like steep 500 basis point increase in interest rates on both sides of the Atlantic, quite in a quite rapid progression, it isn't just those securities they own. Anything which is a fixed interest loan that they've given, and let's be clear about it, we know a lot of people in the States and even in the UK have got fixed interest mortgages below the current interest rate because they're enjoying it. They're making hay at the moment. But likewise, a lot of corporates have done the same. So if they've got the benefit, who's got the actual problem? You know, and these are privately held debt, not securities, which is what most of the focus is on. And so if you actually did a mark to market of all that privately held corporate and individual and mortgage debt, then you probably find the net tangible book value is a lot of the banks may not even exist, because it's absolutely colossal amount of negative equity on that loan book if you had to actually reprice it now. And what that means is that, yes, they can by law keep holding it into maturity, but it probably means their returns going forward are absolutely awful in terms of, you know, return on tangible book. So that's one area that I'm not that happy about, because you'd have expected with good results and sort of like discounts, the net tangible, but the banks on ultra low valuations would have responded more favorably. But clearly there are still cracks in the financial system, and they are the engine that does a lot of the lending into the corporate sector.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's JP Morgan there. You know, it's a high here in July, and then it's, you know, you say lower low, and then it's trying to break this previous resistance, and it hasn't. So you can expect that maybe follow down the trend there. But so if you had to buy a UK bank, what would it be? What would be the choice? What would you go for?
I wouldn't go for one, actually. Yeah. The nearest one I'd go for is Equals.
Yeah. Well, Equals.
The problem I have is that I haven't got confidence in what's in their tangible book.
Yeah.
Because they've priced all of their private assets, their private loans, at cost, what they've lent out. And yes, they've got very low loan to value. There's no doubt about it. So there's a lot of security, but let's just assume that actually the cash cost is fine. It just means that their interest they're getting on that sort of like that loan is 2-4%, and therefore, you know, in terms of what they could get now, they could get 5-8% on the equivalent loan. And what's going to be quite interesting and enlightening, I mean, I'm sure you remember, but you know, Metro Bank got into a bit of a pickle about 2 or 3 weeks ago and got a bit of a bailout on its equity. And it's trying to sell a £3 billion mortgage book to whoever wants to pick it up. I will be stunned if they sell it for £3 billion, even though it's probably their best quality book, simply because I bet you most of the interest on that is at lower level than 5% currently, or what you could get on a mortgage at 6, whatever it is, 25-year mortgage.
Yeah. And it's also, I never got it. And I saw people trading around saying it was worth this and worth that. But I thought, no. I mean, their customers are dying out, okay? First of all, having, you know, walking banks, very expensive. You know, legacy players, the traditional banks, they've been going in a different direction completely. They're not stupid. They know what costs and what works. And I don't, let's be honest, didn't most people want to go into banks? Unless, if you can use the internet, why do you want to go into a bank? They're so expensive to have as well. And I thought, it's just a model that doesn't work. And you can see that, you know, the legacy banks have been around for a long time for a certain reason. They change when the market changes. And also, you get the same way. You haven't got big enough size to do anything. I just think they're in trouble. In fact, the founder recently said, this probably won't be around in 5-10 years' time, Metro Bank.
Would you buy any of the UK banks?
No.
Sacco. So we've got universal.
I find it very complicated reading their balance sheets and all that stuff. I think, what's that? Because, of course, their assets are their loans and all that stuff. For a while back, when we were talking to Russ Mould, he said, you know, for a while we've known there's something smelly under the floorboards of these banks. And
I think you just need to wait. I wouldn't say never, ever, you know, sort of like that I'll buy a bank, but I just want to wait until 2 to 3 years for their effectively repricing of their debt on their balance sheet, so I actually get a firm indication of what their net tangible book is. But at the moment, I've not got any confidence that whatever's published at the moment is anywhere near reality if they were ever to have to mark to market.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, there was big news this morning.
Go on. I've been
racing around like a blue arse, such and such. And we've had Supreme. Who put out a trading update, and they've put the new industry vaping effectively initiatives in place. And as you remember, I mean, these guys are an FMCG products business across vaping, batteries, lighting, and sports and nutrition. And a couple of things they've done. First of all, as you know, the vaping industry has just been under siege by the media of late, despite, you know, basically vaping being a very good way, in fact, the best way of getting people off sort of like tobacco, which is the, you know, one of the biggest killers, et cetera. Anyway, so it's put out even more best-in-class measures to be able to clean up the industry. So It's put a lot of sort of like hard yards into stopping underage vaping. It's now putting a lot also into the recycling of disposables to clean the or improve the carbon footprint of the industry. And it's also, you know, basically putting a lot of measures at the stores that, you know, doing the checks and stuff like that. So it's going far and away above what the industry requires. In fact, it's really championing all these initiatives. So that's an absolute sort of, you know, feather in the cap of the business. And the CEO in particular owns quite a few of the shares, Sandy Chahal. In fact, I think he owns over 50% of the company. He bought some shares. In fact, about 390,000 shares only a couple of weeks ago. So he absolutely believes in it. So they're really cleaning up that industry and they're championing and pioneering it, etc. And also what's really good is that they've demonstrated that you can, you know, be best in class on sort of like, you know, these industry improvements and hit the numbers. And they came out with an inline trading update for the first half, suggesting that they've done 100 million in the first half of turnover and 15 million of EBITDA. And suggesting that they're absolutely bang on line with their full year, which is about 200 million of revenue and sort of like 29 million of EBITDA in the midpoint. So, yeah, I mean, they're really knocking the ball out the park, but being best in class as well. I mean, it's just a shame that they've been tarnished with the same brush of the industry, because these guys, they're basically putting in flavors that are just, you know, absolutely, you know, adult targeted in terms of what they actually want. You know, they're changing to plain packaging and also they're, you know, basically cracking down on underage, you know, vaping. I mean,
these guys
are over and above whatever is required. They're such best in class and getting battered on the market for all this great behavior.
Yeah, no, I saw this today and I thought, excellent, at last someone is making a move and standing out there getting ahead of regulation, saying, and for a long time people have said, well, if these vapes are for, you know, people are giving up smoking, why do they have silly flavors, why do they have, you know, cartoons on them, why are they brightly colored? And so now their own range, it's obviously you can't do it to other ranges, but their own range, plain packaging, all bright colors, is not going to happen. Age appropriate flavors only, so it'll go from peach dream to just peach or just strawberry. Like I said, trading with, and this is important as well, to trade only with retailers with age robust verification, because there are lots of bad players in the industry, and that's the problem, is dragging down the name of Supreme when they're not. They are trying to, you know, help the industry in some way, and even like disposables, are very good there. But it's good to see that, it really is, and it's something, you know, that should have happened, but they are almost first movers in that space, so it's very good, I think.
Yeah, and if you look at the actual shares, I mean, they trade at roughly around about 7 or 8 times PE. I mean, it's just a joke. They've got sort of cash on the balance sheet. They trade at a really low valuation and they're knocking the ball out on the top line. So, you know, it just looks totally mispriced to me, which is why the CEO has bought a shed load of shares. I mean, you know, 390,000 shares at what, about 120, it just translates into over £400,000 worth, and just shows you that, you know, he's got massive confidence and there's a lot of value here in the actual business. So they're doing a great job. The value will show out in the fullness of time. And big picture, you know, people should just think about the benefits as well. That, you know, if you're a smoker and you're trying to get off tobacco, which is killing you, yeah, then vaping is the best way of actually doing it, which is why the NHS is giving 1 million vaping devices out to people to help them quit. So it makes total sense. And to me, I mean, I don't vape and I don't smoke tobacco either. I don't smoke full stop, yeah? But however, you know, if I did, I'd want to stop, no doubt about it. But I haven't got any problem in terms of what is, you know, if you take in nicotine, yeah, that you need to get off smoking, or you want a buzz, etc. What's the difference between caffeine and nicotine? There's no difference at all. Or if you go on to alcohol, I mean, I'd actually say alcohol's worse, because you get drink drivers, you know, off the back of it, and you get people with, you know, liver cirrhosis and stuff like that. So I haven't, or just if people who eat too much sugar or processed fat and this sort of stuff. So you look at sort of like the health benefits and the amount of criticism that the vaping industry got. I actually think you know, it's just so lopsided that, you know, people are losing sight of the actual positives for it.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, you know, they sort out the youth problem and the environmental aspect of it. It's fine. What else is there?
Yeah. Now, the environmental aspect, I get it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they're putting in these reusable vape pods. Yeah. No, I actually think the environmental side is probably the worst issue. And then, obviously underage, et cetera, you've got to stop that as well. So those two. And the measures they're putting in are doing that.
Yeah, okay. That's Supreme, S-U-P there. So trading in a range there, of course.
Yeah. Have you been buying anything? Because you were tempting me with that sort of like, you teased me last week with your little purchase, but you couldn't you couldn't spill the beans who it was.
Yeah, no, it's very liquid. This is called, they came on the podcast, it's called Silver Bullet Data Systems. And they came on the podcast when they IPO'd back here, which is, of course, top of the
very
market.
Ominous name, that is, Justin, Silver Bullet, because you've got your name on it, haven't you?
Well, do you know what? I know, but the thing is, sometimes you when you've got cash, I've been a lot more disciplined of late, and I've not, you know, just gone for things I thought, oh, could be a good, it's undervalued. But when I look at something, I think, first of all, I like small companies because they have the chance to multiply. Have they got scale, though? That's the thing. And do they have something special? You know, that's the difference between, making a 10, 20, 30% in a stock and really, you know, multiplying your returns several times over. And I looked at these. When they first come to market, I was talking to Ian, the CEO. I thought, I like that because they're into data and they restructure data. They've got a marketing side. There's two sides to the business. It's sort of a marketing services side. So any company that has a lot of data and wants to use that for advertising or rearranging it. For example, Channel 4, when they started All 4, they wanted their own sort of ad buying platform. So they hired Silver Bullet Data to come in to sort out their data and put in systems and all platforms, all that for them. And they do that. But what's exciting, at the time they talked about this launch of a product, which is 4D, it's called. It's an AI product. And what it does is helps advertisers get better return on their investment. It's in the digital advertising space now, which, of course, digital advertising is massive. It's like $700 billion a year. And the big deal is here, what I didn't understand, and I looked into it, was the deprecation of third-party cookies, which is happening. After GDPR, I mean, you've probably noticed, if you go to a website, you'll have an advert follow you around the web, the internet on all different things. And you're, well, how is that happening? It's because you accept it. In fact, back in the day, you didn't even have to accept it. They just put a cookie on your browser. They'd follow you around. But with privacy regulation coming in and being more stringent, you can't do that anymore. And so there's big players in the industry, pretty much, is, you know, Safari, Firefox, have already stopped support for third-party cookies. Now, the big player is Google. 65% of web traffic is Google Chrome. And, of course, they earn about $230 billion a year from Google Ads. And they did say they'd be phasing out third-party cookies in 2023. They're dragging their heels because, of course, they earn so much money from it. So what they do, how do you target advertisers? And they do it by contextual advertising. So it's not new contextual, but what 4D have is a little bit different because they specialize in computer vision. So their 4D machine, their AI sort of product, can look at video on YouTube, on connected TV like Netflix, and they can tell people, advertisers, if you advertise on this website or that website, you've got a better bang for your buck, basically, than on those websites there. And so before, they look at suitability, safety, and relevance. And so they don't actually target the person. They target the context of where you're advertising. And this is going to be huge. It started off like this before cookies came around. But now it's going back that way. But they have something called computer vision, which is, of course, most advertising, video advertising is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And they got some huge clients. I mean, they launched this sort of officially back in, well, they did trials back in June 2022. And they had AXA, Disney, WPP, all using it. But they've only just launched it. It was a bit delayed because COVID and stuff. But they've only just launched it back end of Q4. But revenue was gone up by 100 for the first half of this year. Revenue went up by 122% to 1.2 million. Now, their marketing side, it went up to 3.6. So they're doing about, for the half year, about 4.6. They're going to double H2 forecast, 10 million, and pretty much doubling next couple of years. And they're going to be profitable in the start of Q4. But I just think it's a massive area, huge. And they're plugged into some of the biggest, you know, programmatic platforms out there from Trade Desk and all that stuff. And they've done trials. And this is an amazing trial. They went up Renault, they did a trial with Renault, and Google, they used Google's offering, which is on also on a programmatic platform, and they beat Google's offering by 133%. And
wow,
every trial they've taken is like their AI product is phenomenal. The stats, if I can get it for you, I'll show you the stats on some of these. But it is phenomenal. And I just thought, they have something special. They're very special, and it's changing very quickly. It's a huge market, they say.
What's the market cap of it?
About 17, 18 million, I'll check now. It's gone up recently.
How much cash do they have still for the cash runway?
That's the only issue I said. The only risk they've got is that they had 600. They spent a heck of a lot of money developing this product, of course. Product development does. But now that's dropped through. So their cash burn went down from 3.2 million, 3 million, but 1.2 million for the half a year. So they're burning about 200 grand a year. And in fact, they could get through to, they said they don't need to raise money, but I'm always of the, if someone's close to needing money, they probably will need money. So I'm thinking they probably will need money, but the growth is amazing. So this is AXA, for example, trialed them, and they did a 35% increase in completion rates on video. This is IPA Green King. They had 1.7 times more booking than legacy contextual solutions. Who is it? Nintendo. These are people they're working with. And like I said, 74% increase on view rate. This one here is amazing. Trial with Renault 4D solution was pitted against the contextual advertising solution off by Google. There's 103% increase in click-through rates, 51% in page view. It beat Google's offering on every metric. But those are some of the best things. So, and the competitors in this space, there are contextual advertisers out there, but Oracle was acquired, Grape Shop was acquired by Oracle for $325 million in 2018. They didn't do computer vision. They just do contextual advertising. So they look at the text on websites and stuff. They may get that. This one, Double Verify, they've actually got some staff from Double Verify, but it was founded in 2008. Revenues are $243 million. Basically listed on the New York Stock Exchange for $5.6 billion. So, the margins are excellent as well. You look at sort of margins of around about, gross margins are up at about 70, 80%. EBITDA margins are going to be around 30%, operating, 15, 20. So it's one of those things that can scale very quickly because the product's out there. They spent a lot of time developing it and it's cost them a lot of money. But now they are, generating revenue from it. Like I said, if you look at the last set of figures here, even without 4D, the growth has been spectacular. But you can see here, up from, 2.3 to 4.16 is for the half. So that's, where was it? So, 79% increase on H1. 4D went up by 122% to 1x2. But even their customer experience services unit did, 65% up to 294. So those two parts of the business really feed into each other because they can either consult and help you or they can use their product, which is plugged in. So I like it a lot, And if you look at the board, they're very experienced. But do your own research, everyone. Like I said, they may need cash, but I just think it won't be. In fact, I did watch an interview with them and I spoke to Ian. And one of the interview questions was, I want to put 150 grand in £1.50. And the CFO said, well, we're not raising money, so you'd have to buy it in the market and all that. So they're saying they don't need cash, but the going concern is that they may need to raise cash. So they're close to the knuckle, but they will be profitable on an EBITDA basis early 2024 anyway. So, and then in 2025, it really kicks in, the margins really kick in. So I just like it because it's massive space, digital advertising, and it's growing. It's still growing very quickly. In fact, if you look at put a thing here. I did a video on the weekend, but this is, oh, by the way, these are their clients. Heineken, Mars, ITV, Green King, it's like Dell, BMW, Lego, it's big clients. But this is the advertising market, pretty much, digital advertising. By 2030, it's going to be $1 trillion, pretty much. But even the growth in it is phenomenal, and video advertising is growing as well. So it's a big area. There are some big players in there. I just think if their 4D product is that good, it'll either be taken out or it'll just grow massively.
Yeah, I would say if they've definitely got something there which is industry leading and proprietary and a huge step in technology wise, then somebody will buy them, no doubt about it. Because, only 15, 60 million market cap, you'd buy it for 100 million given the size of the market and then just, industrialize it and globalize it, wouldn't you?
Exactly. It's one of those things. I literally, stocks and shares, you can, sometimes when you're thinking about and researching a company, and it doesn't happen very often, but I wake up at stupid, well, in fact, you get up at stupid o'clock anyway, but I wake up at 2 or 3 in the morning thinking, hang on a sec, I really like that. And I went down, I had to start research, re-researching again at like 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, and I went through the admission document, everything. I went back to like shareholders, who's this guy, who's this guy? And, you know, I think I really like this. And
have you got full position in it?
Sort of, I'd say half, because okay. I'm wary that if they need to raise money, I'll be literally, if they do raise money, just after that, I'll be in, and then I get a full position on that, you know, okay. because it's not, it's illiquid. But like I said, they're burning about 200 grand a month, and they've got just close to 700,000, and they said they'd be profitable in early 2024. So they may need a you know, small amount, but you always got to be wary they may need to raise money, you know, on companies.
Yeah.
Like, good. Yeah, like that. Come on, any impact you've been buying as well.
Yeah, well, I've bought one which is actually quite similar, but I mean, it's an adjacent market. It's called RWS, which is probably one of the world's leader in all things sort of like language translation. And its bread and butter is sort of it's sort of contextualizing or culturalizing, technically making it correct, and also doing all of the sort of like making sure that the corporate people know. So basically, it takes information.
What a biggie then?
Takes language and push it into multiple languages. It's about 950 million market cap business, and it's been sold off largely just on the back of fears over AI, how it will actually impact its bread and butter business. But actually, I think it's going to be a beneficiary. It trades on a roughly around about 9-10 times PE. It's got cash on the balance sheet. It did stumble in the first half simply because of the market. For the whole language creation went a bit soft in the first half. But I actually think, I'll give you an example that it could be a beneficiary of AI. With regards to, you know, training it, let's just say, for instance, you've got a proprietary data set that is all, say, in one language, you know, large language model, and you want to do generative AI off the back of it, i.e. create new content from that and then translate it or automatically be able to, you know, translate it to multiple languages across your corporate or your customer base, etc. Then these guys will help you train that generative AI model to be able to automatically translate it, you know, into multiple languages. And that may well be on a technical basis. It may well be, you know, sort of like medical. It may be legal, financial information. It could be, you know, auto parts and all this. So really sort of like, you know, very, it has to be accurate, no doubt about it. So they'll help one train you, which could be a big opportunity. And also you may even need their ongoing support as well to keep on to keep refining that particular model to further improve it. So I actually think this is going to be a beneficiary, and it's got 50 million of cash on the balance sheet. It's been doing a stock buyback. Pays a good dividend. I mean, I can't remember exactly what the dividend yield, 5% dividend yield. I think the market's got this one wrong, to be perfectly honest. I've bought a full position. It's obviously liquid, 900 million. Pounds, etc. And I'm happy to hold this one for some time. I just think it's too cheap for a quality stock with sort of like 47-48% gross margins. And it should be a beneficiary of AI, rare as the market's pricing it is going to be totally taken to the woodshed
People get scared by that. It's the same with silver bullet. I've seen a couple of interviews, people say, how will AI affect you? And I said, well, we are an AI, you know, our product is AI, and we'll be a better beneficiary of that. I mean, they help advertisers get a better return on their advertising. They don't, they're not going to be affected by their product is AI enabled. Well, I quite like it. I've said to people, if you're looking at buying stocks, you gotta know what you're buying. If you're buying a growth stock, you don't need to get uptrend, you need to avoid a downtrend. If you buy a big stock that's paying a dividend and it's in a range, that's fine, because you're just basically collecting stock. That seems to me now it's hitting a range. You see there on your RWS, it's literally that 227 level. It's bouncing off that nicely. So as long as they come out with half decent updates, it could hopefully want to break up.
And these guys already use 60% of their translations are already done by machines anyway. It's only the last 40 which then are tailored to, you know, patents and medical and healthcare and financial markets, where you just got to be absolutely, you know, really spot on. And the other side of their business is actually translating patents. It was just artificially soft in the first half because the EU have only just introduced a new unitary law, which kicked in on the 1st of June, which means that if you file a patent now in Europe, then it only needs to be in one location, because those guys will approve it for the rest of the, you know, the actual region, etc. You still need to translate it. But what that meant is that you've got this backlog they'll be working through in the second half as well. And of course, that's even a higher value to be able to translate really sort of technical patents to get it absolutely spot on, which is obviously what you do. So, yeah, no, I'm pretty much happy. It looks too cheap to me. It looks like a good quality, you know, I mean, let's be clear about it. You know, any stock has got risks, no doubt about it. And the economy is not roaring at the moment in certainly corporate spend. But I think with this AI, I actually think AI is going to be a real driver for them, training generative AI models, certainly next year and 2025, 2026. It could just be a huge, because they do it for sort of like, you know, as I say, websites, e-learning, they do it for videos, they do it for podcasts, they do it for all kinds of different stuff. We'll wait and see, but no, I'm very happy, and I'm delighted I've got it, so I've got a full position.
Yeah, cool. But I put a couple of alerts on there. 260, I think it breaks that to start, but 280, it needs to break that. It's good though, because it's a 50-day moving average there. It's broken that. Now it needs to break new highs. So you can say that's flattened out, 50-day moving average. Good. And now it needs to break new highs, which almost that gap, the gap down. Why did it gap down there on the 24th of April?
Yeah, that was probably their trading update for their first half, because the market overall for translations has softened down as corporates have decided to, you know, cut any discretionary spend and just do essential.
Yeah, cool. All right, what else have you been buying?
Yeah, no, I've got Water Intelligence, which is another one, which is basically all things leak detection, sort of like minimally invasive leak detection.
Yeah,
they do storm water as well. And interestingly, also in the UK, they do flood sewage prevention systems, which is obviously a big topical issue. With sewage getting pushed out into the sea and into rivers and reservoirs around the place, which is why you get all of this algae bloom during the summer. So it's come down. It's been artificially, in my view, sold off again. But as long as you've got a long term view, you should be fine. They've got a good solid balance sheet, say 60 million market cap. They're trading around about 13 times PE, and the one thing they have been hit on is in the States is particularly is new build housing and new build property, because that is a part of their, you know, when you put a new property, you want leak detection systems and servicing into it. And that has softened off their growth and, in the first half. But they're moving more towards rental, and that will come back. And that's the buying opportunity. It's been sold off on the back of, you know, current temporary fears that will actually resolve itself. And if you think bigger picture into some secular growth with global warming, i.e., you know, you've got more storm water, you need to preserve your water usage, etc., with, you know, stop leaks, etc. I mean, that's, you know, in houses and properties as well as obviously in the water companies. So water is a more costly resource, and you've got to obviously look after it. So I think these are good, and they've got a good growth engine, also, not only from the secular positions, but also they'll be picking up their franchisees out in the States as well, as they want to sell out, that they'll be picking them up at a good price, and they'll all be earnings enhancing, and they've got a very good balance sheet to do it. So it isn't a problem. Let's be clear. It's a steady eddy, cheap, sort of like, you know, water stock that won't shoot the lights out, but actually I'm pretty happy just to hold it and keep it.
Yeah, no, it's funny, is it? Michael Berry, do you remember at the end of The Big Short, they said his next investment opportunity is water related, and it is a resource that we're all thinking about.
Yeah,
but I did like that. I watched it for a while, and I think when you get that shoot up at that and come back down, this bear market, you know, provides so many opportunities. It may need a while to bottom out, but like I said, it's, you know, I've been looking at it a while. In fact, I already have a chart alert on this, but
I wouldn't surprise me if somebody buys this as well. RWS could well get bought out by somebody like one of the big venture capitalists like Tomo Brava in the tech space. But these guys could be picked up by any PE player, you know, give it a decent premium, 100 million market cap, easy. People would take that, be able to finance it. And it's a good secular growth story that they could, you know, take out cost and turn it round in 5 years and make a good handsome profit. So, And the CEO who's been there, who's founded it, I mean, I think he's been there for 10, 15 years. I mean, you know, he could easily, would not surprise me if he's coming up to retirement and somebody knocks on his door and says, you know, you're interested in selling. But hey, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, a couple of comments here. And Nishad said, all banks are insolvent if they're forced to sell their low-interest bonds.
That's probably not far away from the truth, actually.
Paul, any thoughts on Seattle's first OEM? I've spent a couple of hundred hours looking at all the players and I've narrowed it down to two. 80% sure it's one and believe they're in advanced discussions with the other one anyway. What's your thoughts on Seattle?
I don't know the identity of the Indian OEM. I couldn't comment because I really haven't got a clue, but it's obviously a big guy with multiple platforms out there. And what I think the key is that it now showcases the technology across the whole world with EVs, and it puts them on the map. So when people want to actually get e-drive trains and buy them and procure them OEMs, then they are now in that mix to be able to pick up business, and they'll have people knocking on their door, not the other way around. So, plenty of opportunity in my view. I mean, obviously the shares are currently, you know, suspended until the results come out. But just wait until that happens and until they come back on trade and we get more information. But I would be stunned if they don't win now more OEMs on the back of this really big deal that they've got out in India.
Did you say you bought three shares?
Yeah, no, I've got another one.
Go on then.
You were asking me about Saeta. I was going to go on to the third one. Now, the other one was, I was actually having a good rummage through Christopher Mills' portfolio from Harwood Capital, who I really rate. There's a number of fund managers I really, he's one of them, no doubt about it. And he's got 14% of a company called Asset Co, which is ASTO is the ticker. Yeah. Now, this is, in my view, reached an inflection point. I mean, look at that chart, yeah?
Yeah.
It's got, okay, the market cap, I think, is about 50 million, something in that sort of region. It's got 20 million of cash, okay? And it's not far off break even on the cash, okay? So it's got 20 million of cash. Mm-hmm. It owns a 30% stake in a IFA technology software platform called Parmenion. And that is worth, in my view, roughly around about 80 million quid, that 30% stake, okay? Because it does nearly 20 million of EBITDA, this Parmenion business each year, okay?
Yeah.
So when you've got 30% of it, and it's owned by private equity who look as though they've had approaches as well. So at one point, that's going to go. So if, let's assume they've got 80 million of value in Parmenion, they've got 20 million of cash, that's 100 million. The market cap is just over 50 million. And they also own a really good sort of like, they're a fund manager in equities across the UK, Europe and India, in emerging markets. And they bought River and Mercantile and SVM and people like that over time. And they've been doing a buy and build strategy. They've got about 3.3 billion assets under management. And I think that is worth at least 30 mil. Okay. So if you put it all that together, I get a sum of the parts of roughly 90p per share. And it just happens that there's a couple of brokers out there. One's got 97p per share and the other one's got about 130p per share. So I'm not far off the ballpark here. So I think there's significant value. Now, that is just static as well, because the thing I haven't built in yet is this is run by the exec chairman, Martin Gilbert, who's basically, you know, he's a rock star in the fund management industry. He set up Aberdeen Asset, Management originally, and he's done buy and build. So this guy knows everybody. He's the who's who of the whole industry. And he's, he's got his biggest shareholder is Christopher Mills. So between them, these guys can open any door that's possible. Okay. So I think not only have they got this, the asset in terms of, River and Mercantile and the equities, specialist equity fund manager, I think they'll continue doing the buy and build. And they've got this, and they've been basically taking out cost over the last 12 months behind the scenes. And I think they're just about approaching profitability. In fact, the house broker reckons that they'll be slightly loss-making next year, but then reach profitability in 2025. Mm-hmm. Now, if that is actually the case, then anything incremental on the top line, whether they win any more mandates or buy them or build, but, you know, add acquisitions to the to their you know, the hopper, the actual existing business, will just drop straight to the bottom line, because this is really high margin type business with you know, fund manager fees. So I think there's significant upside here. Even if they don't, there's significant upside with the sum of the parts of, you know, effectively well over double what it currently is, and it's got a growth engine, and they've got great management with unbelievably good industry track record, who's got Rolodexes that everybody would kill for. So I just think this looks totally mispriced. Anyway, I've been trying to buy, and I've bought some shares, but I haven't been able to buy too many because the liquidity is not fab. But I think as more people see it, then there'll be a better chance to actually get, you know, sort of like more volume. But you know, I think it's a great company, and I will continue to add to it. I haven't got a huge position in it, but it's something that is on the radar for a lot of people. As I say, you just pick. There's so much good stuff out there. As long as you're prepared to look, you know, further than the next month or 2 months, you're prepared to look 2, 3, 4, 5 years. This has got a great opportunity, in my view.
Yeah, well, I've just hit the follow button there, so I'm going to be alerted on RNSs by notification, so download the app. No, do you know what? I think if you're doing a buy and build strategy in this area, this is the time to buy, isn't it? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Because in a couple of years' time, you know, we all know valuations will be increasing. And I've looked at, you know, many fund managers have been hammered because they are a barometer for the market. The markets have been hammered. But you think, you know, a good quality setup like this, it is one, you know, basically it will take off when the market takes off, you know, and you just got to have a bit of patience. And
yeah, well, I'm hoping to actually speak to or interview Martin Gilbert in the next couple of weeks. So I haven't yet sort of nailed it, but with a bit of luck, I'll be able to get him in front of investors and they can have a good look at the business as well. But honestly, to me, this looks like just totally mispriced. It's sort of like, okay, you've got a property empire, you've got a bunch of, you know, really valuable properties, and it's priced at sort of like, you know, 40% of the value, and essentially you've marked to market those properties. So it looks like hey, who knows? It doesn't need any money. It's got 20 million of cash. It's got great management, and it's got, you know, it's got lots of really good valuable assets with a growth story as well. So it ticks all the box, other than I just need a few more shares.
Well, you should tell Martin, while you're buying and building, I'm buying and building in your stock. So, it's bottomed me out there pretty much at 36 pence. So we'll see. Nice start. I mean, you can see it could be a bottom there. Start of a bottom. You may have bought right at the bottom without even looking at the chart, Paul.
Oh, no, yeah. Well, I mean, those are the good ones. Those are the recent ones. Now, another one which came out with good results is, or came out with a good contract win, is Avingtraz, you know, the specialist engineer that's got the medical side of it. Anyway, one of its divisions, Metalcraft, won two more nuclear power decommissioning contracts. These guys do these ultra super secure 3 meter by 3 meter storage boxes for low level nuclear waste, and they have about a 70 million pound contract. Anyway, they won another 14.5 million pound contract as well to add to over the order book. Now is over 75, but this is really just the tip of the iceberg. There's a contract in the next few years that will be coming out from the likes of Sellafield, which could be 900 million pounds. Now, clearly, they won't win all of that, but they could certainly get their big chunk of it, and that just got a huge growth engine, no doubt about it. Interestingly, too, Christopher Mills is the biggest shareholder of this one as well.
Okay, we've done quite well there. So,
but I haven't been able to buy any. I haven't bought any shares in this one. It's such a great quality stock that. Yeah. If it ever falls down, other experienced and sensible shareholders buy before I do. So you've got people like James Thorne, who's been loading up on it as well, at Columbia Threadneedle. It's a great, great quality growth story, this one. No doubt about it. Yeah, huge absolutely. Secular trends, good margins, brilliant management team. I know we've talked about it a lot, but anyway, it just highlights the opportunity.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? When I was searching around for Silver Bullet recently, you were talking to a fund manager, actually. You mentioned it. I don't know who it was.
It was Paul Jordan.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Paul Jordan likes it. Yeah, no, He, I remember talking, yeah, exactly. It was about 6 months ago. In fact, I'm getting Paul back on, actually. I'll get him to talk about water intelligence again.
Silver bullet. Yeah. So he's talking about that. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I wonder who it was talking about it. Cool. Anything else on the radar? Anything else happening?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other ones in my portfolio, I've had a couple on the healthcare side which have gone south, but we've had some director buying in one. One's Inspiration Healthcare.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do neonatal baby incubators. Yeah. That part of the business for their own technology has done okay, but they've had some consumables from a US supplier that hasn't come through, which gave them a profit warning at the first half. Plus, they had destocking in their other part of their business, which is infusion pumps for patients, etc. Anyway, so the shares have sold off, unfortunately. They hit a low that last week, and then you've had a shedload of directors buying. So that's pushed it up, which just says to me, actually, that's just totally mispriced. And it is. When you look at the numbers, it is totally mispriced.
Oh, look at that. Directed by.
I know. I mean, it's on, even on these lower valuations, it's less than 12 times PE, and it's got a good solid balance sheet with plenty of IPR and looking to launch in the States. So I'm very, I'm underwater on it. I've lost money, but that's the classic sort of, to me, just keep holding it and don't lose any sleep.
Yeah.
Another one which came, would you believe it? You know, I've got the vaccine boys, Pfizer, out in the States, It's probably isn't on this, on the Vox one, but they came out with a profit warning on Friday night after the close. I mean, can you believe it? They not only did they reduce their earnings expectations, they reduced it by over 50%. I was expecting the market to...
Pfizer,
I was expecting the market to basically just totally sell their shares off on Monday, and the shares went up. I mean, it was just like nuts on a massive profit warning. The shares went up, and that says to me there was plenty of people who were shorting the stock going into it, and had to cover their position. So I'm not hopeful going forward, but it does sort of put a bigger spotlight onto their onto their pipeline and also the cost cutting they're doing. But it was the profit warning centered all around their vaccine, their COVID vaccine, and their antiviral. But they are taking a whole bunch of cost out. So again, another one but this is a massive company, $200 billion market cap business with huge franchises in, sort of like, as I say, with vaccines and all kinds.
Do they pay dividends?
They paid great dividends. It wasn't a problem. Pay lots of dividends, and they've got so much fantastic medical science in it. But it just shows you, even if you go big cap, you can get absolutely
that's why I've gone back to small cap. Is I find them a lot easier to understand.
It's been one of those years that I've recycled money into stocks, and just about every single one I've bought, and this is a health warning for everybody, every single one I've bought has almost gone south. So, you just got to accept that happens. And bear market, you get bad news. So,
I know, but look at that series of lower highs there, and they need to break that. They need to come out of that. I tell you what, talking about healthcare, I mean, I've had a 52-week high on my Destiny Pharma, which is nice.
Yeah, that's done really well for you, doesn't it? What happened there? It just spiked up yesterday, didn't it?
Yeah, they did they came up with more data on the XF 73 pipeline, and they're also publication of, peer-reviewed papers, but they tested the XF against 2,527 Staphylococcus species in clinical isolates, and literally all of them, effective against all of them. And I was watching an interview with them yesterday, and they had a panel of people coming on talking about these peer-reviewed sort of known people in this area. And I got a laugh. I don't know who it was, the professor. I did tweet about it. But he did say, where is he? Professor Richard Proctor. Basically, typical sort of, I think he's American, yeah, but they're all quite sensible doctors and clinicians. Really go into a deep data dive about it all. But at the end of his presentation, this American guy, Dr. Richard Proctor, said, I don't want to go on too long, but suffice to say, XF73 is the real deal. And I liked, because, the CEO even, is saying it's, just on XFS nasal, this is a $2 billion plus opportunity in the US alone. And they've got a pipeline in XF73 dermal. Now, just a reminder, this is the second asset going to phase three. They're going to be partnering up this soonish, I assume. Originally, it was before the end of the year, but the new CEO came in, so it may go a bit further than that. But they're adding more value to this. They've already got a phase three partnered asset in M3, and looks like they've got a pipeline there as well. So yeah, no, it's all. I do like what Chris Tovey, the new CEO, is doing. For example, this too long hour presentation with the experts, providing their papers and their findings. It's excellent, just showing it's just providing more data, which is liking the chance of a bigger upfront signing.
What was the average buy-in price you got in?
I'm up about, I think, about 70% on those now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Brilliant. Well so, done, mate.
I literally bought around here, I think. I'm saying that.
You about doubled your money then in that case.
Yeah. I'm to be honest, some of my stocks, for the first start of the bear market, all went wrong for me. But in recent months, it's been fine. I mean, I doubled money on Long Life. Even Good Energy, which I bought the wrong period. I should have paid more attention to the chart. I don't know what's happening there in the recent days, but if you look at that, come down here, I bought around about here. I'm up sort of 20% on these now. Yesterday, huge amount of volume. It's risen, and then last few days, and then a huge amount of volume came in. I don't know whether it's a particular seller or not, but it rose up here, and a massive volume came in,
That says to me there was a it's been tipped somewhere, some guys tipped it. Investors Chronicle or one of the tip sheets or something like that.
But if you look at this from 2020, you've seen a series of higher lows here, and then literally this one has spiked up recently. It's now above 200-day moving average 50. So I'm hoping this is the start, the bottom of the trend, and it's going up, because like I said, they are valued below net asset value. They're tumbled out of cash. They're in a growing area. Generally, I'd say in the last 3 months, last quarter now, I've sort of my portfolio has gone up.
What's your portfolio for this year to date?
I've been scared to look at it, but I think it's got to be around about 10-15% generally.
Hey, brilliant. Yeah. Well done, matey. That's great news. Considering AIM is down 15-20% this year, I mean, that's fabulous news.
Well, what I've got is a bit of ballast as well. So I've got that, in fact, even though it's not going upwards, that fund, when I started buying around here, it's the FTSE, 250, 100 highest yielding, 50 highest yielding dividend payers, dividend stocks. So that's my biggest holdings, about 20% of my portfolio. But I'm only down about, I think, 2-3% on that. But of course, it keeps paying me a nice dividend every quarter anyway. Yeah. And that provides some liquidity. Rather than just keep cash or put it in something that's a bit more volatile, that keeps a bit of a ballast to the portfolio. But apart from that, I've got six microcap, nanocap stocks and that, basically. But I do feel that even though AIM, is like hitting new lows, I do feel in a lot of stocks, they're bottoming out, some of them, But like I said, it is RNS, 7 a.m. time. It is almost like, avoiding the falling knives, isn't it, sometimes?
It is,
Which companies have come out with a profit warning and take a 50% hit? Now, that only happens in a bear market, 50% hits. It happens a lot in the last few months. A company would come up with a profit warning, you get about 50%. And you don't see that in bull markets, only in bear markets. So anyway. Yeah.
Finishing up on the healthcare side, there's some news out from Oncommune, who do these antibody profiling services for all the big biopharma, or seven of the world's largest 15 biopharma shares. And they've had a new CEO, a guy called Martin Gulston, coming up, and he's just tweaked the strategy. So he's expanded the usage into things like prognostics, and also into using the technology for contract research organizations, and also looking at new indications, sort of things like, basically the central nervous system, so Alzheimer's and diabetes, like the GPL-1 drugs, etc. So it's what he's doing, basically. They've got such a fantastic biobank of proteins there that they can effectively, there's lots of different application areas they haven't really touched on and commercialized yet. So he's adding those to the actual, opportunity set. Now, the thing which has obviously hit the company over the last 12 months is that because interest rates have gone up, a lot of biopharma have cut back on their early stage research. That's not their sales. But that will change, no doubt about it. Plus, he's moving some of the commercialization model, not just doing a selling on a per test basis. He's going to do it for a sort of risk and reward, whereby if the drug that they're developing comes to market, then he'll get a percentage of the royalties. So that could be huge. I mean, really what it comes down to is now going to be, you know, it's hit a bottom. It's going to is there to maximize the money, you know, the actual value of that whole, you know, sort of like product set. Mm-hmm. And he's haven't managed to touch base with him yet, but it seems a pretty sensible strategy, i.e. such that, you know, to expand that total addressable market into new customers, into the contract research organizations, and also new indications and applications for the actual technology itself. So at some point, with a bit of luck, I'll be able to touch base.
Yeah. In the meantime, let's volunteer hats, everyone. We all know October, September are dreadful months anyway. But November, December, generally good. So I think it's me, honestly, near the bottom.
Well, I hope so. There's another one which came out with a training update today, which I own, which is ActiveOps, which does the robotic software for large financial companies and insurers and people like this. And this helps the productivity and the planning, particularly on a hybrid workforce. And they've come down, but you know, they've got a really rock solid balance sheet, 10 million of cash. They're growing, it's all high margin. You know, they're growing at sort of like mid single digit, 6%, but they're putting a lot of AI into it. So they're improving the product for the customer as well. So things like, you know, improving the services and the quality of the service and say the productivity that customers can get out of it. So they're in the right place at the right time as corporates want to maximize the what they can get out their hybrid workforce at different locations. And, you know, it saves the company, its clients a shed load of money. So it seems to be, let's wait and see, but it's growing well, it's high margins, it's run by a founder, Richard Jeffrey, and I think, you know, that will keep going, but it's hasn't really got out of its range, but that doesn't really bother me, to be perfect honest. I'm very happy just to hold this one, and if it ever came down below 70p again, I'd buy some more shares, but I do have a full position in it anyway.
Okay. Marvellous stuff. Cheers for that, Paul, and we'll speak in a couple of weeks' time. Hopefully the markets will pick up.
I think. Any more, just before we finish, any more questions at all?
No, I don't think there is. There's one, there's one on, I don't know much about it, Fab.
That's the...
It's too small for that, but...
that's fusion antibodies, isn't it?
Yeah.
Out in the island, I think they are.
Yeah, I'll have a look at a chart there, but it literally raised some money. The trouble is, sometimes I do like small companies, but you're very careful going too small because you think they can't scale up because they, you know, if you think a company can raise about 10% in money of the actual market cap, and once that market cap is set at a certain level, it's, you know, they're raising smaller and smaller amounts. And I know they're cutting costs, but to me that's flatlining. And needs an uptrend, needs a break up.
Or somebody buys them, I think is probably the best exit, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, if it's got a good IPI, somebody bought it would be 25p plus, but that is a low risk bet you want to take.
Yeah, exactly. I did say, someone said yesterday on taking stock that one of the biggest mistakes they made was buying Thomas Cook on the hope of a buyout. And I said, never buy a company on the hope of a buyout. Mm. Buy a good business and that hopefully will get taken out. It was undervalued, you know, but never buy one with the sole intention that it will get taken out because you have no idea where it will. And with Thomas Cook, it didn't end well, did it? It's literally the wheels came off the plane, essentially. okay. Cheers for that, Paulie. Speaking
in 2 weeks.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.